One of the themes that underlies many of the shmuzim that I give is the idea that yeshiva, your time in yeshiva is supposed to create a paradigm shift. You walk in with a certain picture of the world and how things are supposed to work, and you even have your own goals. And studying Torah in a yeshiva environment has to shift your paradigms. It has to shift how you look at the world. This parsha that we have now, Shlach, the parsha of the Meraglim, of the spies, really one of the most difficult parshiot to confront, to really understand properly. And as much explanation as is given, and we're going to try to give explanation, it still remains very, very difficult. But it will certainly, I think, help us, and it needs to help us create some new paradigm shifts, some new ways in how we look at our Avodas Hashem, at our goals, at the process of what we're doing. So we're close to Chodesh Tammuz and Av, the months that have the two big sins of the Jewish people in the desert. Chodesh Tammuz, Shivasar B'Tammuz, has the Chet HaEgel, the sin of the golden calf, Avodah Zarah. And Tisha B'Av, this week's Parsha, represents the sin of the Meraglim, the spies. And through the levels of the fast days and the destruction that each one represents, we see clearly that the Chet HaMeraglim, the sin of the spies, is viewed much more severely than the sin of Chet HaEgel, of the golden calf. We need to understand what exactly was their sin and why was that viewed so terribly. And there's some other details we'll try to fill in. So in case we had any doubt about the quality of these Meraglim that ended up bringing such tragedy and destruction to the Jewish people, in case we had any doubt about who they are, so the Parsha opens, Shlach lecha anashim v'yasu etz Kenan, and kulam anashim. The idea of Anashim means they were great people. Not only that, point out the Meforshim, but they are listed in the order of their greatness. All right? And it starts with Ruvain, Shamua ben Zakur, Shimon Shafat ben Chori, and we only get to Yehoshua like fifth. Okay, Lamateh Ephraim, Moshe ben Nun. Yehoshua wasn't even the greatest of the spies. So of course, this creates an unbelievable question. How did they mess up so badly? What did they do? What were they thinking? What was their mistake? How could this happen? We also have to understand, after we'll understand how they messed up, why were Yehoshua and Kalev insulated from whatever mistakes the Meraglim made? So there is some technical indications of how they were protected, right? Where it says that, right, Vayikra Moshe Lehoshea bin Nun Yehoshua, says Rashi, Hitpalel alav. Moshe davened for Yehoshua, ka yoshiech me'atzas meraglim. Moshe somehow or other intuited that there may be a problem here, and he davened for Yehoshua that he should be protected from whatever the meraglim were cooking up. And Chazal learned from another textual anomaly when it describes the spies entering Eretz Yisrael, Vaya'alu Vaya'turu et ha'aretz, Vaya'alu Vanegev, it's describing the spies, all the things that they did in plural, Vayavo ad Chevron, and it says he came to Chevron, singular. Says Rashi, based on the Gemara in Sota, Kolev levado halach l'sham. Only Kolev went to Chevron. V'nishtateach al kivrei avos, and he davened on the graves of the avos, Maras Hamachpela. That he should be insulated from what they were planning. Right? So, there seems to be here a dimension of tefillah. Moshe davened for Yehoshua, Kalev davened for himself, but there's an aspect here of tefillah to be insulated from what was going on. What was going on? So, the Meraglim come back and pretty much they reported exactly what they saw. But they tried to convince the Jewish people that we don't want to go into the land of Israel. We don't want this. What were they thinking? So I believe Rav Dessler has a treatise on it, and other later commentaries also explain that the Meraglim saw Eretz Yisrael for what it was. It's a physical land that requires agricultural work and war and economy and Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash. It's a very materialistic, lush place. And that was the problem. Because they were comparing that to their existence in the desert. What was life like in the desert? 40 years of complete spiritual connection with God, no need for any involvement in the physical world. They didn't have to plow, they didn't have to plant, the food came down every morning, their clothes never wore out. They're in an unbelievable spiritual environment. Who would want to leave such an environment to go into a physical environment where there's, besides physical danger, there's spiritual danger? And one could say their motivation was very elevated. They preferred the spiritual environment of the desert over this very unpredictable, very threatening in physical environment of Eretz Yisrael. Where was their mistake? Well, the mistake is obvious. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was commanding them to leave the desert and go into Eretz Yisrael. So, what do they want, and what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want? And one could say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is commanding them to realize that the next step for Klal Yisrael is to leave the desert and that bubble, that well-protected spiritual environment, and go into an environment that's more challenging and more dangerous and more unpredictable. Because there is spiritual potential in that physical environment, and your challenge now is to unlock that spiritual potential. Your challenge is to see that in the physical, there's also spiritual potential. That's what Eretz Yisrael is. On the surface, it looks like a land. It looks just like any other land, and it's not. It's a spiritual land. It's Kedusha. But Kedusha means to take something that's physical and actualize the spiritual potential. That's a big challenge. And we could say that the Meraglim were really very self-centered. If we're going to tie the two sins of the Chet HaEgel and the Chet HaMeraglim to the destruction that it precipitated, So the Gemara says that if Klal Yisrael worships Avodah Zarah, but they do it with unity, Afil Yisrael Ovdim Avodah Zarah V'yesh Sholom Beinehem, Ein HaSatan Nogea Bahem. They're insulated from the Satan. But when they are B'machlokes, so then the Satan has free reign. And where did Chazal see that they can be Ovid Avodah Zarah, and yet if they're united, the Satan can't touch them? I believe the answer to that is the Chet HaEgel. Because in the Chet HaEgel, the Jewish people were united, the same unity that they had, Vayichan Yisrael Neged Hahar. They arrived at Sinai united. Then they got scared because Moshe isn't coming down. So that same unity didn't disintegrate. It was just misdirected to the Egel. But they were in unity. That's why Chet HaEgel basically was forgiven. When Moshe asked for forgiveness for Chet HaEgel, God basically said, forgiven, will collect a little punishment on the installment plan, right? That over the years, every time I have to punish you, I'll just take a little punishment extra for the Chet HaEgel. But basically, it was forgiven. And in fact, the generation that committed the Chet HaEgel, only the 3,000 active participants died. Everybody else, we're moving on. And then we come to Chet HaMeraglim. And the response to Chet HaMeraglim is everybody has to die, and it's the forerunner for Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av, the destruction of the Second Temple, because of Sinas Chinam. What's the connection between the Chet HaMeraglim and Sinas Chinam? The Chet of the Meraglim, they didn't want to go into Eretz Yisrael. Is that so terrible? A lot of people don't want to go to Eretz Yisrael today. What's the big deal? I think that the secret is that they were self-centered. Sinas Chinam means I'm worried about me. And that you can even serve God worrying about you. You can have a self-centered agenda in how you want to serve God. I want to serve God my way. I want to serve God the way that resonates with me. And sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a different plan. Because service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu means that you have to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu the way He tells you to do it. And you have to listen. And you have to be open to not worrying about you, but being there to serve. So the Meraglim wanted to stay in the desert, and that really was very self-centered. It's about them. That's the root of Sinas Chinam. The root of Sinas Chinam is I'm worried about me. Now, the whole idea, the whole concept of Torah, and if you go through the Mem Chet Dvarim Shat Torah Niknes Bahem, is the idea that Torah doesn't operate the way other systems operate. It's not like another academic system. The Mem Ches Dvarim Shat Torah Niknet Bahem show us that you don't access Torah the way you access other things, and that's the paradigm shift. Torah is something unique. It requires midos that you don't have to have if you want to be an expert in chemistry. It requires a connection to the klal, not just being an individual, but a connection to the klal. Maral says Torah was not given to the individual. There wasn't a Matan Torah to Avram. There wasn't a Matan Torah to the Shvatim. There wasn't a Matan Torah to the Shivim Nefesh. We could only have a Matan Torah when there were Shishim Ribu, when there were 600,000 Jewish Neshamos. Torah can be given to the klal. And therefore, when somebody wants to access Torah, they have to make themselves part of the klal. And sometimes that means at the expense of your own personal agenda, if that's separating you from the klal. This is a paradigm shift. But this is when HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals Torah to us, He's telling us this is how He wants us to serve Him. Not the way it appears to us, but the way it's being revealed to us on how we're supposed to serve Him. And it's a very fine balance. And on a certain level, Rav Goldvich Zatzal, Rav Shiva of Keren B'Yavne, used to talk about how yeshiva is an environment of the desert. What does it mean, the desert? You don't have to worry about your food. You hardly have to worry about your laundry. Right? You know, you don't have to worry about your sleeping arrangements. Everything is given to you. On a certain level, it could have a downside. Okay, because you get used to thinking that, you know, everybody's got it, somebody else has to take care of you. And you better be careful you don't go into marriage with the idea that, okay, this is going to be a continuation of my yeshiva experience, right? That I just show up in the dining room and the food is there, right? You know, and somebody else has to be there to wash my floors, etc., etc. But on a spiritual level, it's a bubble. Right? And it's necessary, just as the Jews needed that spiritual bubble for 40 years, but the goal was to empower them, to strengthen them, so that now they can leave that, quote, bubble and go to a higher madrega of interacting with the physical world in a spiritual way. Because at the end of the day, that's the challenge. The challenge is to be able to interact in this physical world, in a material world, and extract the kedusha and have a spiritual life in a physical world. It's very easy to have a spiritual life in a spiritual world. That was the desert. And on a certain level, as much as you think it's tough in yeshiva to be spiritual and growth oriented, it's a piece of cake compared to what it's like out there in the real world. Right? So you have to strengthen yourself here, but you have to realize that we're not running away from interaction with the real, with the physical world, but we're empowering ourselves to be able to interact and elevate and confront all those challenges. And this is where the Meraglim ran away from it. This is where the Meraglim say, you know what? We don't want to do it that way. We want to do it in a way that's more comfortable. And many times we run away from challenges. And on the one hand, we don't look for tests. But on the other hand, we have to realize that growth only happens when we are in challenging situations and we're able to stand up to them and to overcome them. Besides the tefillah, how did Kalev and Yehoshua get insulated from that? One of the ideas that's discussed is because Kalev and Yehoshua were very connected to Moshe Rabbeinu. And if we go into the Memches Devarim, Shehatorah Niknes Bahem, which is how we access Torah, one of the themes, the way the Maral explains them, is that when we're studying Torah, we have to realize we're studying divinely revealed wisdom from Sinai, and it's already in the first of the 48 things that the Torah is acquired with. The first one of the 48 is Talmud. Now, the simple way to explain Talmud is you have to study. And that's how many people want to explain, right? The 48 things are giving you good study habits on how to acquire Torah, just like you would acquire chemistry. Right? No, it's something unique about Torah that isn't true about any other wisdom. So how is Talmud unique? Says the Maral, the first five words in his explanation, "Sheyilmad mi rabo v'al yismoch al chochmoso." Talmud means you have to study Torah from your Rav and not rely on your own understanding. Well, chemistry, you could rely on your own understanding, because maybe, you know, you could be just as smart as your professor, because your professor is a man, a human being, and he figured it out. The Chiddush of Torah is that it comes from a Rav. Why is that important? Because the Rav got it from his Rav, who got it from his Rav. What we're really doing is we're accessing the Sinaitic divine revelation. And Shimush Chachamim, as another one of the 48 things, is to create the connection with the Rav, to be a Mekabel, says the Maharal. The Torah is accessed in a very different way. Again, we talk about paradigm shifts. Torah is accessed in a very different way than any other wisdom. It's not simply an intellectual exercise. It requires personal connection to enable that transmission of the wisdom that we have from Sinai. Yehoshua and Kalev had this personal connection with Moshe Rabbeinu. They were Mishamesh Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's what enabled them to be insulated from the Atzat HaMeraglim. That's what enabled them to be insulated from the misunderstanding that the Meraglim brought to the table. we'll anticipate another very problematic parsha we're going to have in a couple of weeks that also relates to Eretz Yisrael with a similar theme. Moshe Rabbeinu is commanded to provide water for the Jewish people by going to a rock and talking to it and getting out water. And Moshe Rabbeinu goes and wrong rock, that he hits the rock with the stick and water comes pouring out. And you read that, if you would stop there, you would see, wow, this is amazing. What a miracle. Well, look what Moshe Rabbeinu did for the Jewish people. The next pasuk comes from nowhere. Sorry, you didn't believe in me, you're not going to Eretz Yisrael. What? What happened? Moshe Rabbeinu hit a rock and got miraculous water instead of talking to a rock and getting miraculous water. And because of that, he can't go to Eretz Yisrael. What was the problem? And how was that a proper consequence? Eretz Yisrael has spiritual potential. It's a physical land with spiritual potential. That rock, by providing miraculous water, is a revelation that the physical contains within it spiritual, miraculous power. And there was more revelation by talking to the rock than by hitting the rock. It's a bigger miracle. Right? Talk to the rock is, you know, on a scale of 1 to 100, it's a 99.9. And hitting the rock, that's an 85. That's a lot, but it's not the same. And the fact that you didn't access all of the spiritual potential, you didn't reveal all the spiritual potential that's there, that's a compromise in your ability to be in Eretz Yisrael. Something we can't understand, but that was God's calculation. We have to appreciate that we are in, first of all, you're in Eretz Yisrael. The spiritual potential that exists here has to be actualized and recognized. Right? It's not just another place. Okay, you know, right? There's Jews in Muncie, and there's from Jews in Borough Park, and there's from Jews in Yerushalayim, and there's a few less from Jews in Beersheba. But it's all, you know, no. The land, the environment, the air, the economy, the agriculture, the people. There's something transcendent and unique here, and we have to appreciate it and look to access that spiritual potential. Paradigm shifts. We have to look to the Torah to inform us on what our challenges are, how we're supposed to serve God. It's not always what our instincts or our intuition tells us it's supposed to be. Many times it's counterintuitive. And we're not always tuned in to all of the opportunities that we have. And we look at a parsha like this, and again, it's simply almost incomprehensible. And that mistake that the Meraglim made impacted on Jewish history forever. The Maral talks about how there was an abortion of the master plan. The master plan was leave Egypt, get the Torah, go into the land of Israel. If that would have happened, everything's fine. But there was a breakdown between the giving of the Torah at Sinai and going into Eretz Yisrael. Somehow or other, the people were afraid for that challenge. And that defined our connection to Eretz Yisrael in a different way than it was supposed to be. Our connection to Torah is eternal. And somehow or other, the connection to Eretz Yisrael is a much bigger challenge. After 2,000 years of disconnection, we're being given the opportunity to reconnect. But we have to understand what we're reconnecting to. This isn't just another place that Jews now happen to either have a safe haven or not have a safe haven. We have to appreciate that we're being given the opportunity to be in the place that the Jewish people thrive and flourish in on a spiritual level. And we have to take advantage of it with all the challenges. If you're going to have to leave Eretz Yisrael and go back outside of Eretz Yisrael, you still have challenges. There's still spiritual potential in the physical world, not as much as here. You have to realize it. The challenges are greater outside of Eretz Yisrael. The potential is less. But again, every person has their situations and every person has their challenges. And we have to realize that there is the ability to extract the kedusha, to extract the spiritual potential from every situation, every interaction. And we have to listen to how HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to serve Him, not for us to try to tell Him how we would like to serve Him. That's the challenge, that's the mistake of the Meraglim, and it's our job to reverse that. Last night, one of the questions that was asked, I want to just pick up on it. I didn't know what Baal Shem Tov water was. I apologize, but apparently there's such a thing that I assume if you drink the Baal Shem Tov water, it's supposed to create some kind of spiritual accomplishments. Okay, I don't know whether it's true or not, but I'll take a very strong position here and say, even if it's true, you don't want it, because it's a shortcut. It's a shortcut. The Meraglim wanted a shortcut. And we're not looking for shortcuts. We're looking to confront and work very hard at our spiritual accomplishments. And that's, again, a paradigm shift. In our Western world, we're always looking for the fastest, easiest, quickest way to get to the goal. All right? Fast internet, fast solutions, fast communication, fast food. Okay, that's antithetical to spiritual growth. It's antithetical to Torah. It's one of the major paradigm shifts. We're not looking for shortcuts. One of the things you've picked up here is there's such a thing called Amal HaTorah, the struggle. And in our spiritual growth, we have to be ready to struggle, to make to confront the challenges, and not look for any shortcuts, even and especially no shortcuts in our spiritual growth.